From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 23rd day of February 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And then K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us closer to the bottom of this hour to take up the agricultural energy markets. In agricultural news, last-ditch efforts are underway in Washington, D.C. to salvage a climate change bill. The Secretary of Agriculture says biofuels are viewed by the Obama administration as a job creations industry for rural America. And flu experts are today assessing the continuing threat, or not, from H1N1. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us from Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take up the agricultural weather forecast. So you should stay here with us on the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Learned Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby March wheat at $4.91 3/4, 9.5 cents lower today. May contract at $5.05 3/4, down 9.5. And the July, that's the harvest month, $5.18 1/4, 9.5 lower. July wheat in Kansas City at $5.20 1/2, down a dime as well. March corn back in Chicago, $3.67 3/4, down 3 3/4. The May at $3.78 3/4, 4 cents lower. And July, $3.89 1/4, down 4.5 cents. September contract, $3.96 1/2, down 4 3/4. December corn at $4.03, down 5 cents. March soybean futures, $9.52 1/2, down 9 for the day. The May at $9.59 1/2, 9.5 lower. July at $9.65 1/2, down 9 3/4. And the August soybeans at $9.61 1/4, down 9 1/4. September, $9.42 3/4, down 9 1/4. The March bean meal at $2.79.60, down $2.10. The May soybean meal at $2.73.90, down $1.80. March bean oil at $38.31, down 52. The May contract 52 lower at $38.78. February live cattle, $91.75, down 30 cents. The April at $92.42 1/2, down 80. The March feeders at $101.15, down 67 1/2. And the April feeder cattle at $102.47 1/2, down 70 cents. April lean hogs today at $69.45, finished 85 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $78.92 a barrel, down $1.39. March ethanol at $1.70 3/10, down $0.01 8/10. Natural gas at $4.78 4/10, 11 1/10 cents lower. The RBOB gasoline at $2.06 8/10, down 4 7/10. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.03 2/10, down 4 1/2 cents. And the gold futures today, $9.90, that is, lower on their settlement price at $1,102.70 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 10,307. It's just about 76 points lower. And the U.S. dollar at 80.85 is up 0.34. The CRB index, the Commodity Research Bureau index at 272.52, is down 4.26 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast from our own Mike Sola looks like for the evening tonight. Mostly cloudy skies, he says. Some scattered light showers, a few flurries. Lows this evening will range from 8 in northwestern Illinois to 26 in the far south. And then tomorrow, he says, in west central and southwestern Illinois should be partly to mostly sunny. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy and windy. Some scattered snow showers, a few flurries. Highs tomorrow, says Mr. Sola, will range from just 18 in northwestern Illinois to 35 in the far south. The extended forecast says another surge of cold weather is on the way. High temps tomorrow will be only in the 20s over much of Illinois and Indiana, some 15 to 20 degrees below average. Some moderation in temperature expected headed into the weekend, but temperatures will still remain cooler than average. No big storms are expected during the coming week, but a much more active weather pattern may set up heading into the second week of March. We'll have complete details on the agricultural weather forecast for the globe when we talk to Don Day at the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. On the line with us from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, is Wayne Nelson. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
After a big day yesterday, lots of green on the board. We managed to hold on to it for a while, but turnaround Tuesday just could not be resisted by some in the trade.
Well, I think there's a lot that went on today, Todd. First off, the big move up yesterday, the little follow-through this morning on news of the possibly cancellations of registered beans to be delivered, moving into the cash market, feeling the tightness there. And then when they moved through the highs on for the move, then we saw some technical buying that come in for a little while, but the crude oil being down close to a dollar and a half, the dollar being up anywhere from 25 to 40 cents through the day, the stock market being down 80 to 100 points through the day, and gold being down $8 to $10 through the day, just finally started weighing on the grain markets at the end of the day, and then we saw the sell-off from the outside markets' influence.
Is there any more here than just in interday weight of the marketplace of things that were happening around it? Is much changed in the marketplace in the last 24 hours?
Well, see, that was the whole thing. We had sort of a discernment of wondering what was happening when we had a 15-cent rally in the beans at midday today, when there really hadn't been anything except outside market influence there was, we still have the big crop in South America. We talk about a little too much rain in some areas, but we got dry weather forecast for the next 10 days. We talk about wet planting conditions in the spring in the northern Midwest, and last time I checked, we got a lot of weather between now and then before we plant the corn. So, nothing has really changed. Nothing was really close up, and there wasn't any big fundamental reason for the rally or the sell-off, to be very honest. So it was sort of fund-induced, I guess.
Fund-induced rally. Well, at least the marketplace was moving. I suppose that meant somebody made money and somebody lost money. But over the long haul, as you look for the hedgers or the farmers in the marketplace, where do you think they ought to be positioning themselves for their new crop soybean sales?
Well, I think, we hit one target today. If guys had orders sitting there, very few did. The 945 to 950 has been a place that we've been looking at because of the great influence out of South America's big crop. We're just feeling if they are way behind that 945 to 950. Now, 945 and three quarters was the high today. So unless you had orders sitting there, we're just very lucky why we probably didn't get checked. But, back up in that area again is a place where we'd probably be adding to our sales.
And did you suggest that they take advantage of new crop corn sales yesterday too?
Well, the new crop corn sales, yes, we did sell some corn at the 410 level yesterday, added to our sales, and did pick up a little more of a percentage hedged on a lot of people.
And what are the other types of things that producers are mostly asking you about? I suspect many are wondering about what the corn not in their bin is like, but in everybody else's bin has been like, and whether they'll have to move it anytime soon.
When we talk to farmers out there, we just want to highly recommend that they have cored their bins or checked and look at it, that they turn on the fans and see what it smells like and things that way. And there was a lot of corn, I think, in more of the northern Illinois region that had a little lower test weight and didn't dry down well. And I think we've seen a lot more corn move in the DeKalb, LaSalle County, and up in that area more so than they have down in our area here, Todd. I think their corn just didn't have the quality that they were hoping for, and it's not storing well.
Anything else that we need to talk about before I let you go for the day?
Well, in 2 weeks, Todd, it'll be the all-day outlook meet again. We're looking forward to seeing everybody there, and if you haven't made arrangements or got your tickets, why we'd like to encourage all of you to do that.
Yeah, in fact, Dave Dickey will be here in a moment to tell everybody how to do that. Thanks much for being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support comes from the Westchester Group in Champaign, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of agricultural investments for institutional, corporate, and individual clients. Information at 800-607-6888 or at westchester-group.com.
Now here's Dave with all the latest information on how you can sign up and pre-register for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting on March the 9th, and then he'll be along with all the Ag news, too.
The 20th annual All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 9th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Sue Martin, Steve Freed, Chip Flory, Glenn Ring, Joe Persaki, John Bondrand, and Ed Kieser. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail you your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, sources say that a last-ditch attempt at passing a climate change bill begins in the U.S. Senate this week, with lawmakers mindful that time is running short. Senate aides say they are presenting senators with a number of options, especially three senators, Democrat John Kerry, Independent Joseph Lieberman, and Republican Lindsey Graham, who are leading the fight for a bill to battle global warming domestically. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack told members of the Governor's Biofuels Coalition on Monday that President Barack Obama will continue championing biofuels as a job creator. Vilsack says that he spent part of Monday afternoon at a meeting with the president talking about the effects of the recession in rural America. Sanderson Farms Incorporated posted a higher-than-expected quarterly profit today. Lower feed costs, higher chicken prices, and industry-wide production cuts have helped Sanderson and rival poultry producers. Sanderson Farms says that it posted net income of $15.8 million, or 75 cents a share, for the first quarter ending on January 31st, compared with a year earlier net loss of $6.7 million, or 33 cents a share. Revenue rose 8% to $420.1 million. Sanderson is building a new plant in North Carolina that will be online in 2011. Flu experts convened today to assess whether the H1N1 pandemic has peaked. The World Health Organization, a United Nations agency, declared last June that the new virus was causing the first influenza pandemic in more than 40 years and raised the alert level to the maximum 6 on its scale of 1 to 6. The WHO's emergency committee, composed of 15 experts, is making a confidential recommendation to WHO Director General Dr. Margaret Chan today. Home prices rose nationally for the seventh straight month in December. The Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller 20 City Home Price Index rose 0.3% from November to December. Only five of the 20 cities in the index showed declines from November to December. The index is now up more than 3% from its bottom in May, but still 30% below its May 2006 peak. On a quarterly basis, U.S. home prices fell 2.5% compared with the fourth quarter of 2008. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you that we are just 2 weeks away now from our all-day agricultural outlook meeting. It's scheduled for the 9th day of March. That's the second Tuesday in that month at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Please do visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org for all the details and to register early. We'll close pre-registration this week. Now up next, late winter and early spring is the time for farmers to consider the productivity of a pasture. As you'll hear, it might be well served by adding a legume to the grass mixture. The experts call it pasture renovation. It is, however, quite simply, says University of Illinois Crop Systems Team educator Jim Morrison, a good solid way to increase pasture productivity.
Let's just say we're going to interpret renovation by adding a legume. The main reason that we are doing that, of course, and this has been substantiated in not only farmer experience, but also a lot of research that has been done. We increase the yields, the dry matter yields from that pasture. We increase the number of grazing days. We decrease the acres that would be required for a cow-calf pair. And then if you look at the tall fescue situation, and there's Of course, again, that's the predominant cool season grass in, say, the southern half of Illinois. In those endophyte-infected tall fescue-type pastures, by adding a legume, we are certainly increasing the conception rate, the beef cow conception rate, in those pastures in which we add a legume to that endophyte-infected tall fescue.
Again, that's Jim Morrison from the University of Illinois discussing the reasons to add a legume to a pasture. There is a short list of legume plants to use. It includes red clover, a red and white clover mix, or an interseeded sowing of alfalfa or possibly bird's foot trefoil.
Those would be some legumes and legume options for adding to a existing grass-dominant pasture.
Typically, Morrison says seeding rates of the legumes should be set such that 30 to 40% of the dry matter production coming off the pasture is derived from the legume. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Well, I just checked with the Director of Ag Programming here at Illinois Public Media, Dave Dickey, to see how sales, pre-sales, were going for All Day Ag Outlook meeting. That is March the 9th. Yesterday, I told you, we had 197. Today, that number is 240, and we stopped selling the tickets, at least for pre-registration, on Friday of this week. You can call now if you'd like at 800-528-7980 to book your tickets. Again, the number is 800-528-7980. The cost is $20, and that includes a light continental breakfast at the Beef House and lunch there as well. We'll mail you the tickets, and you can walk in through our VIP entrance. It is Tuesday afternoon. We always talk about agricultural energy markets on this day of the week. Dan O'Brien with K-State Extension is with us today. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How are you today?
Doing well, Todd.
We're looking forward to our March 9th day. We'll have lots of folks. I hope maybe we'll push, if we get lucky, 400 out there at the Beef House. That should be fun. One of the things I know they're going to ask us about are the Ag Outlook forums and what they had to say in Washington, D.C. last week. In fact, you penned an article on that, and we're going to talk just a bit about some bioenergy-related issues that they discussed in Washington, D.C. What, if you boil it down, what did they find from now until the year 2019?
The USDA assumed that the current policy environment and the supply-demand balances for grains would be projected off into the future, and basically came up with projections that we'd see steady increases in the use of corn for ethanol purposes from now on out, into the future, excuse me. In the 2008-2009 marketing year, we used about 3.67 or 3.68 billion bushels of corn for ethanol production, and they're projecting that figure to move on a fairly steady upward trend up to about just a little over 5 billion bushels of corn for ethanol production. Mm-hmm. So, and if anything, they're looking at trend line increases for a number of other areas as well. And, of course, when you're projecting 10 years out like that, you're assuming normal or average crop production conditions and aren't really taking into account any outside supply shocks to energy markets or either outstandingly good or horribly bad crops that might upset balances in any one year, and which would, of course, change the price signals that would be followed by both the input and output side by the ethanol production industry. So, given all that and all the caveats you have to state when you make 10-year projections like this, still the picture looks pretty positive for ethanol production out into the future. The growth rate for ethanol production has slowed from the boom years of 2006, 2007, 2008, but really now we're looking much more closely at whether the EPA, the federal government, might increase the allowable blend for ethanol fuels from E10 up to, say, E12 or E15, and whether that might affect the renewable fuel standard in the long run, and also whether some of the subsidies that we have now, in particular the 45 cents per gallon tax credit available to blenders of ethanol and the 54 cents per gallon tariff on imported ethanol used as fuel, whether those will stay in place or be taken off because of budget pressures or whatever. So you're kind of, again, taking a steady as you go look at the policy environment, projecting out into the future, and with that in hand, you come up with at least projections for growth in corn usage for ethanol and ethanol production out on into the future.
Yeah, I may note that on the chart and in the numbers, of course, that you did state, so we were at a 367 last year, I think a 4.3 billion bushel usage for the coming year. And
right.
Then by 2019, they're just not looking for that much more growth, some 700 million to a 5.025 billion usage. So it flattens out fairly quickly in 2011, 2012 for the rest of that time frame, and is really dependent, it appeared, at least from what you had written, on the ability of Congress to maintain some of those breaks that were already in place, the blender's credit and some of those sorts of things.
Sure. Those have a lot to say about the incentives that blenders and importers have to follow as they as they look to handle, bring in or sell ethanol. The one thing that I didn't see mentioned in this and didn't write anything about is that really no discussion in these projections about what role cellulosic or biomass based ethanol might have in the future. There's a sizable goal set for the year 2020, I think, for increased ethanol production from cellulosic biomass sources, but we're really not seeing any of that in here yet. So there could be even more ethanol than we're planning on in from the USDA projections.
Thank you so much, and we'll take up the biodiesel side of this in the future.
Great. Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien is with K-State Extension, joins us here once a month to talk about agricultural energy markets. Tuesday is our Ag Energy Day on the Closing Market Report. We'll be back in 2 minutes when we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day from Cheyenne, Wyoming.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Some Republican lawmakers living near state universities around Illinois want to be sure higher education will get its share of federal stimulus dollars. They've signed a letter to Governor Pat Quinn and Comptroller Dan Hines to address the backlog of payments to institutions like the U of I. Representatives Bill Black of Danville, Chapin Rose of Mahomet, and Dan Brady of Bloomington are among those calling for a meeting with the two leaders to explain their payment timeline and dollar amounts. With lawmakers back in Springfield this week, Brady says he hopes the letter will engage all involved in a discussion on meeting those overdue state payments. The U of I alone is owed about $475 million. A man accused of leading Mexico's Sinaloa drug cartel has pleaded not guilty to charges that he had conspired to import large quantities of heroin and literally tons of cocaine into the U.S. In a Chicago federal courtroom today, Jesus Vicente Zambada Niebla stood silently with a translator whispering in his ear while New York-based attorney Edward Panzer entered the plea before U.S. District Judge Ruben Castillo. An extraordinarily heavy contingent of federal marshals and security officers were on hand for the arraignment in what prosecutors are calling the largest international drug conspiracy trial in Chicago history. Three Indiana school districts have filed a lawsuit arguing that the state's school funding formula is unconstitutional and penalizes growing districts. It was filed today in a Hamilton County court by lawyers for the Hamilton Southeastern District in the northern suburbs of Indianapolis. The Franklin Township District of Indianapolis and Millerbury Community Schools of Elkhart County are joining the suit. Hamilton Southeastern Superintendent Brian Smith says the district hopes that the lawsuit will result in a more uniform distribution of available money to Indiana schools. Depending on the flip of a coin may not sound like a great way to run a business, but it's paid off not once but twice for a Central Illinois construction company. And it's paid off well. Bloomington-based Associated Constructors has landed two jobs this year worth a total of $1.1 million through coin flips. It turns out that flipping a coin is a legal way to decide the winning bidder on a construction project. When two contractors offer matching bids, the projects are at the U of I, a window replacement at Burrell Hall, and at El Paso Gridley High School. I'm Jeff Bossert.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming joins us. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest to begin with.
Well, as we head into the home stretch here, the last part of February, it's going to be chilly, and we are going to be looking at a little bit of moisture, although the moisture that's going to be coming into the Midwest and the Corn Belt is going to be pretty light, really. We do have some chances for some light snows developing tonight and Wednesday, especially over Indiana, Ohio, but also the central and eastern areas of Illinois into the Great Lakes. But we're mostly just going to be cold. The real story is going to be some real stormy weather in New England along the northeast coast of the United States. Our precipitation here will be light, but do expect it to remain cold.
And then if you turn your attention to South America, where they've been stalled just a bit in parts of that continent as they continue to try to get through their soybean harvest, will they dry out?
They will dry out, especially for harvest operations going on in Argentina. While shower activity is still possible, it looks like it'll be confined to the mountainous terrain of Argentina. And Brazil is a little more wet. They have a little bit of a better chance for showers, but not as wet as what they've been. So there's going to be a little bit of help to speed things up harvest-wise down there.
And we're getting to the point where we probably ought to talk about China and how they fared through the winter as they set up, like we do here in the United States, for the coming growing season.
Well, there are a lot of parallels to the winter in China to what we've had here in the U.S. Pretty cold, pretty stormy, pretty snowy. So really a good analogy when you look at what where China is sitting is look at how we're sitting in terms of soil moisture, which isn't bad due to the winter storminess, and that trend in China is going to continue as well. It really looks like the mid-latitudes, both in China, Eastern Asia, and here in North America, as we get into March, will be in a very active stormy pattern.
If a similar situation, can you look at the two of them and make any correlations or just judgments about one and the other separately as to what the early growing season might be like at this point, say in mid to late March?
Well, I would certainly say that it looks like it'll be cooler than normal, and it will probably be wetter than normal. I'm expecting March to be a very active weather pattern, both here in North America and in China, with at least two or three, maybe upwards to four significant storms. So that is going to lead to maybe a cool and wet start to the growing season over there.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Want to avoid the long registration lines at our 20th annual All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting? Call 800-528-7980 and order your tickets now for the March 9th event. They're $20, along with a continental breakfast and lunch at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You'll hear from Sue Martin, Steve Free, Chip Flory, Glenn Ring, Joe Persaki, Ed Kieser, and John Bondrant. And, of course, we'll have our soybean, corn, and cash grain panels. Call 800-528-7980 with your major credit card, and we'll mail your tickets right out to you. The day of the event, walk in through our VIP entrance.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.